This is case number 55347, the State of Willard Fairhead versus TLC Holdings LLC. Victor Miller on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Brent Vogel on behalf of the respondent. Okay. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Your Honors.
To the police court, my name is Victor Miller. I'm the attorney representing the plaintiff in this case. This case is on appeal from a granting of a summary judgment in the case, and the stated reasoning behind that by Judge Tagliati was that the plaintiff had not presented an affidavit of an expert witness and thus granted summary judgment. It's our position that that was premature in that this case had not been through the full discovery process, that no time had been set for the supplying of expert witnesses, and that if the court wanted the plaintiff to support their case with a expert witness, then pursuant to the plaintiff's request for additional time under Rule 56F, the court should have given the plaintiff that time in light of where the case was proceeding through the court-annexed arbitration program, that no Rule 16.1 conference or joint case conference had been presented, no discovery order had been presented.
You were just going to keep this case in the court-annexed arbitration? This was not going to be one where you're going to try for an exemption?
No. This was a case we were going to stay there in light of the plaintiff's age and the nature of the claim. We thought it was a claim that could be properly handled in the arbitration or short trial program, and thus save all the parties in the court.
So in a short trial program, what would you even need in the way of expert testimony?
Well, if we went that far, we anticipated we'd probably need to get an expert.
Okay.
Gotten an expert.
I know what the time limits. I'm just wondering how they're dealing with the expert issues. The short trial judges are doing that.
Well, under, I think it's Rule 15 of the short trial rules, experts are presented, or it's recommended that experts be presented on their reports.
Right.
And so I anticipated that would probably be the way, rather than to expend the money to bring somebody in.
Okay.
And try to squeeze them in.
I'm just curious on that.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Miller, on this one, how much time elapsed between the filing of the answer by the defendant until their motion for summary judgment was filed on saying there are no issues of fact regarding this expert testimony?
Well, my recollection was that the answer was filed in November, and then the following, in December, and then the following November is when the motion was filed. So approximately 11 months. It was before then. I mean, after they filed the answer, or sometime before we got the appointment of an arbitrator. So it was still within the time frames of the arbitration process.
Okay. But they did have a right to file a motion for summary judgment. I think the rule's clear on that.
Oh, absolutely.
So the only question is, did the judge abuse her discretion in not granting your 56F request to get additional time to produce the an expert report?
Precisely.
Okay.
Yes, that's certainly our position.
Now, this issue of whether an affidavit is required with the complaint in the medical malpractice context, now that, I think you're arguing that it was not raised before the district court, then it's just raised first time on appeal.
Exactly. It's not in their answer as an affirmative defense. And I believe that's because this is not a malpractice case. It's not medical negligence because it has to be a licensed tossle. And the hospital, which is pursuant to the 41A, the malpractice, and the hospital, it's defined in the definition of a hospital in 639.0074 as a facility which is licensed by the Department of Health and Human Services as a hospital. Nothing has been presented to show that they're licensed by this entity. And because this was never raised below, no discovery was done on that issue.
And you didn't name any nurses or doctors or medical corporations as defendants.
And usually under Washoe Medical, usually that's a motion to dismiss right when the complaint's filed.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, that's what we've seen when people have complained that there's the affidavit is insufficient or there's no affidavit at all.
Right.
No summary judgment motions have been filed.
Just on the pleadings, exactly. And then the what they are is a medical facility, I believe, and I'm speaking because of what I'm believing rather than what we know, because this wasn't addressed below. But in 449.013 or 151, it says it defines a medical facility, and in sub six of that, says a medical facility is, among other things, a facility for skilled nursing, which they've referenced several times that they're.
Well, but what do you do with the Fearley case, which says, A, that a corporation can constitute, that a corporation, a professional medical corporation, is subject to the affidavit requirement, and then Fearley goes further and says nurses are among the people who are. A licensed nurse is a provider of health care under the professional negligence definition. So if this entity is providing nursing care and that's what it's doing, as an original matter, I would not construe the statutes as reaching that far. But under Fearley, what do you do with the holding in that case?
Well, the holding in that case deals with a doctor's a professional corporation, which is not what we're dealing with here, where it says that if you... under it's Chapter 89, I believe, that says that the professional corporation is held to the same standard as the professional for which it's being licensed. You have to name that person, and then you have to submit a certification that that person forming that corporation is licensed by their licensing board.
But isn't this entity defendant a licensed entity providing nursing care?
Well, I don't know that because we didn't do any discovery on that because this wasn't raised before today. But from what it looks, from what I've seen just in the answering brief, there's no allegations that they're a licensed hospital or that there are licensed professionals there, which would bring them under the purview of that case. It's not a situation where we're trying to get around the 41A provisions by suing the doctor's professional corporation as opposed to just the doctor.
What the material issues do you believe you have, material issues of fact, that would prevent a summary judgment from being granted if, in fact, you don't need a expert affidavit from a medical person?
Well, we have the question of facts raised by the parties who were deposed and the answers to interrogatories that show that the facility was dilatory in keeping the patient clean, keeping his diapers clean in the way they removed and cleaned him, in moving him regularly so as to avoid pressure sores. All of those are set forth in each of the depositions and in the answers to interrogatories. So there's certainly facts that have been presented by eyewitnesses and from discussions with the facility, hey, you're not taking care of dad or my husband, and repeated, they talked about repeated requests for better care, and as a result, he did develop the pressure sores and got sepsis and deteriorated rapidly. There's sufficient questions of fact with respect to that. On what we have so far without completing the discovery, which we requested for.
Mr. Miller, wouldn't you need an expert, an MD, to say that the dicubitus bed sores are the proximate cause of the sepsis and it's not something else? Wouldn't that be a key part to be able to establish your case?
Well, I think if you look at the causal connection between them, I believe the trier of fact could make that connection without the hired expert coming in to say it. They can see the complaints that were going on and the reason the complaints were going on and that the care didn't change and he developed the things that the family was afraid of.
Okay. Thank you.
You want to reserve the rest?
Yes.
You have about five and a half minutes. Mr. Vogel, you ready?
Yes.
You might as well start off with, is this a mental mal case or is it simply a negligent case? You know, I don't mean simply, the word simply.
I understand. Thank you, Justice.
Please straighten us out on that.
It is a medical malpractice case, and I think under NRS 449, skilled nursing facilities fall squarely within that definition, and we're talking about skilled nursing care. And under the Fearley case, I think we expanded what was covered. If I could step back a little bit, under WashU, we knew it covered hospitals and physicians. We knew 41A covered that. Under Fearley, I think it explained a little bit more, and we talked about nurses, the professional corporations, et cetera. And I think part of the reason a 41A071 motion wasn't filed originally in this particular case is the Fearley decision came out, I think, the day before we filed this motion for summary judgment. And there had been rulings in the past in the district court indicating that the district courts didn't think that 41A covered skilled nursing facilities, so we didn't do it in this particular case.
But if it wasn't raised in district court, can you raise it now?
Well, in our motion for summary judgment, we talked about it being a medical malpractice case. And that, in the record on appeal, if you look at page 185, we say this is a medical malpractice case. But we did not argue forcefully the 41A affidavit requirement. Instead, we took the option of saying, okay, this is a negligence case. It's got very complex issues of medicine involved. Therefore, we took it upon ourselves, let's go out, let's get an expert who's going to opine on all these issues, because we felt that was clearly part of what this case required. And that's why we went out, we obtained the geriatrician to offer opinions on what was the cause of injury and on standard of care.
Analyze it for us under Wood versus Safeway as far as Mr. Miller's talked about material issues of fact. Now, rebut that.
Well, from my perspective on this, when you look at Rule 56, in all the case law, Wood versus Safeway coming down, you can't just rest on the allegations in your complaint. They were faced with two affidavits, one from a geriatrician, one from a skilled wound care nurse, certified wound care nurse with significant experience saying, there's no breach of the standard of care, and it didn't cause the injury in this case. So under Rule 56, including Wood versus Safeway, it's incumbent on the non-moving party to come forward with some sort of affidavit to counter that. They didn't do that in this case. And in fact, they didn't even really comply with Rule 56F. Rule 56F requires an affidavit from the plaintiffs from the non-moving party stating what they need as far as further discovery is concerned. They didn't even do that in this case. What they did is they said, well, we haven't deposed this witness who's an x-ray tech and this witness who's a latent delivery nurse, and we're going to rely on the expertise of the arbitrator in this case, and that's what they did. And that doesn't comply with Rule 56F. So going back to the Wood versus Safeway, we don't have the slightest doubt standard. It is incumbent on plaintiff to come forward with something, some sort of affidavit, even if it was to say we need more time. Now, on the issue of more time, we filed our answer in this case December 3rd, 2008. The arbitration was set for June 7th, 2010, over a year. And as you know, the arbitration program, you're supposed to get it done within 6 months to a year maximum. Under NAR 4, you have to file your motion for summary judgment at least 45 days before the arbitration hearing. We filed it 48 days before the arbitration hearing. So if there was any discovery that needed to be done, it was incumbent on them to do it before those 45 days, whether or not there was an order setting out the need for expert disclosures. So bottom line is, once they were faced with expert affidavits under Rule 56, it was incumbent on them to come back with something in response.
I did arbitrations years ago as an arbitrator. I think there was an allegation that the arbitrator limited discovery on behalf of the plaintiff.
There was no limited discovery. It was just a standard arbitration. You have up until such and such a date to do discovery. The arbitration is this date. There was no discussion about experts whatsoever. But it wasn't limited.
You do agree, though, Mr. Vogel, that if, let's say it had gone to arbitration, and it looks like most of these cases are de novo by one side or the other, and it goes to a short trial program, they could present a report as opposed to live testimony on this issue, would you?
Absolutely. And I think summary judgment would not have been granted had they provided some sort of report in opposition to ours. But they didn't. So when Judge Tagliabue looked at this case, what is she supposed to do? There was no countering affidavit, so there was no question of fact on the issue of causation. And I think we would agree that in a case where you've got an 83-year-old man with a past history of a stroke, congestive heart failure, COPD, osteomyelitis, hypothyroidism, as we did in this case, when you're making the allegation that he now has somehow died of bed sores, which the facts showed he had when he showed up at this facility, you need somebody to specify, you know, from an expert perspective, whether or not the bed sores that he came to this facility somehow were not treated properly and then somehow caused his death.
What was your theory of how he got the sepsis?
Well, the sepsis, and this is a key issue. The experts that we retained on this case looked at it and said, you know, there was cultures of the bed sore sites. It was not, there was no, they weren't infected. So we're talking about an 80-year-old man who also had a history of osteomyelitis, which is, you know, bone infection. He had history of infection. And what the theory was that because of his stroke and his poor deteriorating condition, he most likely had an aspiration. He developed aspiration pneumonia, and that's what he died of. And that's what Dr. Vu, the geriatrician, testified to in his affidavit.
So the pneumonia was caused by something other than a bacterial infection through bed sores then?
Correct.
Okay. Justice Pickering?
What was your response to the 56F presentation such as it was in the district court?
In the district court level, our position was you have to have an affidavit in response, and we're in the arbitration program, which is limited scope, a year at the max. We made our motion at the almost the last possible day we could. I mean, making it 48 days when the last day to do it's 45. That was our response to the judge.
But your argument is they didn't present a 56F affidavit, but
correct.
Nonetheless they did make some effort to say substantively, here's what more we want. Did you argue that what they outlined in terms of what more they wanted was deficient to generate an issue of summary? Genuine issue of material fact in any event?
I did argue that. And the position was that the testimony that they said they would want was from, I believe, the wife of one of the children, who I believe is an x-ray technician, and I think a sister who was a labor and delivery nurse, neither of whom would have the expertise to offer expert opinion as to the standard of care or causation in a case like this, where you're talking about what caused sepsis leading to death in an 83-year-old man.
So they did not say they needed additional time to get expert testimony?
What they said was, you know, we haven't taken the depositions of these two people. And frankly, what my argument back was, well, they didn't even get the affidavits from these people. And under 56F, you should have at least gotten the affidavits saying, you know, this is what they're going to testify to, so the judge could evaluate whether or not that created an issue of fact. They didn't even do that.
But did they squarely say, we need to get an expert, and please give us time to do so?
No, they did not. They said, you know, we were going to rely on the expertise of the arbitrator, and by the way, we have not deposed these two other people that have quasi-medical backgrounds.
Of course, Mr. Miller, I think, conceded that you got to have an expert report to present, at least in an arbitrator. You don't have to present anything, hardly, to speak of, you know, under Chamberlain and some of those old cases. But on the short trial, you still have to present, as part of your case in chief as a plaintiff, expert testimony on causation, I believe, you know, like that, or else you get a directed verdict.
Correct.
Against you then.
Correct. And
so I think he acknowledged that. So I'm just wondering what was represented, like Justice Pickering, what was represented to the court as far as what evidence had to be developed to get this case ready to go. You're saying it was just limited to arbitration, what was going to be presented there?
Well, that was plaintiff's response was, you know, we haven't deposed these two quasi-medical people. Didn't say what they were going to say that was any different than what the plaintiff and the plaintiff's son had already said.
And plus that, they would have been allied with his side of the case, correct?
I would think so. Since
presumably, they could get affidavits.
That was my presumption, and that's what part of the reason I don't understand it wasn't done, why that wasn't done. Because I think 56F is fairly clear. You need to have an affidavit from the plaintiff outlining what you expect discovery to show. I think that's what the Harrison case states as well.
And why it's not available, why you don't have affidavits available with which to oppose summary judgment. I mean, that's the test.
Correct, and that wasn't done. So I think when Judge Togliatti looks at the totality of all the evidence in front of her, she's looking at two expert affidavits that aren't countered.
I noticed in Judge Togliatti's order, at least the one I read here, granting the summary judgment, didn't reference the 56F request then like that. Was there a separate order on that?
She did not address 56F per se, but she said that, you know, part of her ruling was there has been plenty of time in this case, from the filing of the original complaint in May of 2008, the amended complaint in November of 2008, through the filing of a motion for summary judgment, for there have been time for the plaintiff to have been able to obtain an expert affidavit. So she didn't reference 56F directly, but I think that was the purpose of her statement that plenty of time had passed, particularly in an arbitration case.
Okay, thank you. Anything further, Justice Pickering? Justice Gibbons?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Provost.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller, you have 5 minutes and 28 seconds.
Thank you. But just in response to a couple of issues, the arbitration, we mentioned the date it was set. It had been continued my recollection, because of the defendant's request, and then the arbitrator wanted to wait and see what happened on summary judgment. That's why the case was delayed in the actual hearing. The other thing he mentioned, that Mr. Fairhat showed up at their facility with bed sores, and we certainly contest that. The records, first the testimony of the two individuals, the plaintiff and her son, indicated that there was no bed sores. Even the records from St. Rose Hospital indicate a redness. It doesn't say about any bed sores. Now, with respect to Tracy Hall, who is the other person who would have testified at the arbitration, she is a registered nurse, and she's trained in non-ambulatory care, and she could have certainly made opinions with respect to that. The other thing is, with respect to our opposing the motion, in fact, the focus or thrust of our opposition was 56F, and that in the present state of the case, we didn't even have a scheduling order which provided for expert witnesses, and that we needed to have a time set up for that, and if that's what the court wanted, and there wasn't a time given for experts. The case just wasn't right at that time for a summary judgment. If the court wanted to make a decision prior to the completion of the arbitration program, certainly the district courts has the authority to do that. But under the state of the case, time should have been given under 56F. In fact, 56F talks about the court making rulings which are just to allow that. And I think that the court's not giving us time to do those things. If that's what she was going to base her ruling on, she should have given us the time to do that.
So you dispute your opposing colleague's representation that you weren't arguing you needed additional time to procure expert testimony?
Sure. You know, one of the first thing we wanted to do is, let's just get through the arbitration process and see how it all shakes out.
Well, but that's different. The summary judgment can be brought before arbitration and obviate the need for it. Did you argue in your 56F presentation, albeit not in an affidavit, that you needed additional time to meet his experts on the merits of their expert testimony?
Yeah, I referenced having a scheduling order for the supplying of experts, a date for supplying of experts, and the court didn't give that, and we were never under an obligation that as of December 1st, you have to have an expert witness, or you know, they'll make a motion for summary judgment, which is typically the kind of thing that happens in a typical case that's proceeding under the rules of civil procedure. But we weren't allowed to do that.
So you're saying you were prejudiced by sort of the straddle of being in the arbitration program and then confronted with a summary judgment motion that's tracking a more regular case schedule?
Exactly. We were relying upon that arbitration, you know, policy of let's get cases, see if we can get them resolved quickly and with less expense, and hoping that there would be a determination which would cause the defense to look at, you know, either let's settle this case or let's move on. And we would have known if we had a determination from an impartial third party, all of us, both sides, how to better either accept that or better address
the issues.
Anything further, Justice Pickering? Justice Owens?
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel, Mr. Miller, for your arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted. We'll be in recess for 1:30.